Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. First of all, a shout out to our friends at Euro Fantasy Game, where you can read a lot of excellent articles on Serie A from the likes of Enrico Guardaline, John Solano, Chloe Beresford, all frequent guests on the podcast. I wrote an article ranking the teams in Serie A with the biggest margin for improvement yesterday. So if you have to check it out, I think you'll enjoy that. So today we are going to take in the interview part of the podcast towards the end. We are going to take a deep dive on the mid-table in Serie A with my colleague Paolo Mangone from Di Marzio site. Once in a while, we have him on to kind of cover all the teams we don't do regular segments on. We, of course, have our winners and losers segment since it's Monday. By the way, we are recording this before the Inter-Lazio game. We'll talk about that one on Thursday. Then we have your Twitter questions. But before we get to all that, I am joined by our co-host, producer, YouTube superstar, Alex Goldberg. Alex was gracious enough to still record today because I think you, most of you know, he's a big Red Sox fan, and they won last night. So, Alex, how you doing? You excited from the big win?
Yeah, David, you know what? I really should be a lot more, and this is not a brag about Boston, but I should be way more experienced at celebrating championships, but I'm not. And let's just say I'm running on fumes. But, David, I'm passionate about football, so it gets me through it.
Cool. All right. So, Alex, what I figured we'd do, as we often do on Monday, is kind of take stock of a couple of the main storylines in Serie A. I want to get your take, and then I'll throw in my two cents. So I wanted to start with Milan. So yesterday they were the 6 p.m. game in Italy. They were the signature game on regular ESPN here in North America. Shout out to our friend Matteo Bonetti. Great to see him on the regular ESPN station. A big deal if you know about how powerful that station is. So it was great to hear him on that. I thought it was a very good advertisement for Serie A. We had an exciting game. Milan pulled it off in the end. But I wanted to ask you this, Alex. I feel like, you know, this has been going on for quite some time with Milan. We all get excited. Anyone who really cares about Serie A, you know, knows how important it is to get Milan back on track. And now when I look at the landscape of the league, even Atalanta got their act together. I feel like only Milan is missing. But, you know, we have this thing where they take one step forward, then a step back. Sometimes they take two step back. So let me ask you, Alex, because I feel like we've seen this movie before. What signs are going to convince you that Milan's really, really back on the verge of taking the next leap? And I think Inter is a good example because last season they finally got back to the Champions League. And, you know, there's a lot of signs that Inter's definitely on their way. But what are you looking from Milan to feel like they're kind of following the same trajectory?
Yeah, I like the question, David, because it's not an easy one to answer. As you said, Milan could appear to take a big step forward, but then they take more back. And maybe a step forward is just them winning a few games and, you know, they're fifth in the standings. And sure, it's all well and good, but you kind of need a deeper reasoning. You need more symbolism on why they're turning it around. So, David, my answer is, I think, and this is a little bit of a unique answer, I think they need two players to convince me have a present and future at the club, and probably more attacking players. Like, I like Romagnoli. I'm not sure I rate him as much as some other people do, but I like him. Romagnoli is definitely a good center back. He could probably fit at least as the second center back into any side. However, it's not enough for me. Not enough for me. I think they need to be attackers, David. So you have Suso, who at this point, 24 years old, he has 3 goals, 7 assists. He's been tremendous all season long. I think you can say Suso is arriving. So that's one young player on Milan that has some experience now that I would say confidently is at least becoming a good player that should be on most Serie A sides. He's arriving, David. I think we're seeing Suso's great potential, and I honestly think there's more to come. I think you need two. My whole answer is predicated on the fact that I think I need to see two people from Milan, younger players, not a Higuain, not a Bonaventura, not a Lucas Bilia. I need to see two young players that Milan can hitch their wagons to. So when there are some ups and downs, which there inevitably will be, even when they ascend even higher up, they need to at least be able to say, well, we have Suso and we have blank. Now, it could be Patrick Crotone. Good game yesterday. You talked about yesterday's game. Crotone was big. So it very well could be a Crotone who's 20 years old. It could be very nice if Milan could say, all right, we got Suso, who's now a legitimate starter in Serie A. We got Crotone, two younger players who can even get better. I think they need that type of symbolism for me in order for me to say, okay, Milan really have a direction here. They're not only getting results, but they actually have something for the future to feel confident about. Right now, maybe it could be Hakan Çalhanoğlu as well, but he's off to a slow start this season. I thought he would be maybe that second guy. He easily could be, but he's off to a slow start so far. So you have Suso. I need to see someone else jump in that Suso category for me to think Milan are moving in the right direction. David, that's my answer. What about you?
Yeah. It's a good one there. And, you know, I've been writing about Milan for a long time. And, you know, I was on Sirius XM with Tony Miola and Yanis Mikhailik, who are both two Milan fans. And they made fun of me. They're like, yeah, you're always saying we're turning it around and then we don't. I mean, I go back to the Mihailovic days where there was a streak where they did pretty well for a while. And then they're back at square one. So for me, ultimately, though, it really comes down to having enough quality players on the team. Starting last year, when I started to evaluate the transfer moves of clubs, I always tried to look at it in a pretty big context. And to me, if a team really wants to improve, you have to ask yourself if the players that they're adding are good enough for the teams ahead of them in the standings. So for me, I'll be convinced that Milan's definitely back when they have enough people that I can say for sure these guys could start for Napoli and Inter. Obviously, we have Suso playing this way. When he's on like this, he's unstoppable. Obviously, Higuain was good enough to start for Juve not long ago. I'm a pretty big Romagnoli guy, probably more than you. Donnarumma's been up and down, although I thought before the derby he looked pretty good. So for me, how I'm going to judge that Milan's fully back is when I can say that consistently their players are good enough to start. For right now, Napoli, Inter, that's the next tier, and then eventually Juve. Now with Gattuso, you know, I'm still kind of on the fence with him. I've always said he definitely deserved the right to start the season as Milan coach, but I'm still not 100% convinced. We're going to get into Conte and the questions towards the end of the podcast. But, you know, I also wonder if compared to the teams ahead of Milan, you know, if there's still a pretty big gap coaching-wise. But in any event, encouraging game for Milan to win against Sampdoria. Let's see if they can sustain it. The other question I wanted to ask you, Alex, and we've talked of this a lot in different variations, the race for being Serie A's top goal scorers. Piontek has slowed down a little bit. I mean, there was no way he was going to be able to keep the pace he was on. We've had Immobile, who's still consistently very good for Lazio. But Ronaldo, after there was all the watch on when he would start scoring in Serie A, he's been on quite the roll. And, you know, in Empoli, he did a lot of damage. So I have to ask you, as it stands now, if you could bet Ronaldo being the top scorer in Serie A at the end of the season or the field, so basically anyone else, who would you take, Alex?
Oh, man, because this is really now pinning me against my consistent prediction that Ciro Immobile will lead Serie A. You know what, David? I guess it's easier when you rip a Band-Aid off quickly. So instead of prolonging this, yeah, fine, I'll take Ronaldo against the field. Ronaldo's one ahead of Immobile, so theoretically Immobile is still very much in it, as are others. But I don't know. Ronaldo is just Ronaldo. 7 goals, 4 assists already. And now he's starting to score in different ways. A golazo over the weekend. And you're starting to see Ronaldo has gotten his feet wet in Serie A. Juventus are a wagon. And Ronaldo is Ronaldo. I mean, we don't need to sit here and say how good Ronaldo is. Now, the one thing I would say against it is maybe some of the goals will start balancing out for Juventus. Because, David, looking at their Serie A scores, considering how damn good they are, it's actually kind of shocking how little the rest of the team has scored. Ronaldo has scored 7, okay, Serie A goals. Mandzukic with 4 Serie A goals. Bernardeschi with 2. But beyond that, Nobody else has more than one. So you got Pjanic with one. You got Dybala only with one still. You got Bentancur with one. Alexandro, who's a defender, you would still think would have any, but he has none. So you got Douglas Costa with none. So you have some people that you would think by now, considering how good Juve are doing, would have some goals. They don't. So I think it will balance out a little bit more. But with that said, David, I'll just call a spade. Nope, Ronaldo is going to lead Serie A with goals. And another thing to back that up, David, is he's durable. He's durable. So it's not like you really have to worry about him being out for a long period of time. So he'll probably be there to get the opportunities to lead Serie A in goals.
Well, I'm going to stick with Immobile because I like that prediction. And I think the best argument you can make for Immobile is his supporting cast has been up front very poor. He's kind of been a one-man wrecking crew. So I'm going to hang my hat and I'm going to keep your pick alive because there's no way to me that Milinkovic-Savic is going to be this bad. Maybe Luis Alberto was a one-season wonder, but I can't imagine him being this poor. Correa has been really pretty good off the bench. I want to see more from him. So I think it's going to be close. You do make a good point with the durability with Ronaldo. You know what? It still remains to be seen how much Allegri is going to rest them once it gets to the key matches in the Champions League. So we'll see. But definitely a fascinating race. You know, last week you had mentioned Insigne. Let's see if he can keep it going. There's a lot going on scoring-wise. But I think it's going to come down to Immobile and Ronaldo, and maybe Icardi will keep it interesting.
Now I feel even worse jumping ship on Immobile. Now Immobile, just to punish me, Lazio plays today. He's going to score like 5 goals. So, oh, well, that's what I get for jumping ship. All right, David. Well, besides the Lazio-Inter match, we had a great weekend of Serie A. So as we do every Monday, let's do our winners and losers segment. Who do we got?
All right. So we love this segment. So obviously we start with Juve. We'll start there. Ronaldo, obviously a winner. Alexandro, as you pointed out on our Twitter account, had one of his best performances in a while. Both of them winners. I thought Empoli, although they lost, are winners. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that they played a more offensive style and they tried harder to take the game to Juve than Manchester United earlier in the week. So kudos to them. I know Empoli often get praised for how well they play when they lose. I'm sure they want to start collecting points soon enough, but the way they're playing is pretty encouraging. For you, all you Chelsea fans, Empoli is where Sarri got started, and the managers that have been thereafter have kind of kept the Sarri spirit there. Speaking of Chelsea, another winner, and you're going to have to maybe help me with the pronunciation, the left back, Ojaina. Is that how you say it, Alex?
It's actually Olaena.
Olaena, yeah. So he had a very good performance for Torino. Torino's been a little bit of a mystery. We'll get into it in our interview with Paolo towards the end in that match. We had Benassi for Fiorentina score against his former team as well. Both winners, but you got to feel that draw kind of felt like a loss for both teams. Then we had DePaul, who's had 5 out of Udinese's 10 goals this season. He's been really sensational. Udinese doesn't have much else, but he's been really, really good. In that same match, we had Genoa's Bessa, who scored another game. He's had 2 goals since Juric came back as a manager. Speaking of Genoa, their former striker, Pavoletti, has been quite good for Cagliari. He scored his 19th goal, career goal, off headers in Serie A. That's really quite remarkable. And that same match against Chievo, Castro scored against his former team. So an important win for Cagliari. We want to give a shout out to Pippo Inzaghi with Bologna. I was very down for Bologna to start the season. They've had some pretty good results recently. They drew against Sassuolo on an away match where they played quite well. For the Milan match, you mentioned Cutrone earlier. He's been really excellent. I really see Cutrone as kind of Milan's version of Mandzukic. Not a very gifted technically player, but the guy plays with his heart out, a lot of determination. I think Berlusconi has to be very happy with Milan looking like a different team, playing with 2 strikers up front. Higuain definitely looks a lot happier when Cutrone is next to him. I also want to give a shout out to Frank Kessie, who played that match. You know, he was pretty banged up, and I thought he played quite well. The reason I want to mention him is there's been a lot of talk for Milan fans on how fragile former Atalanta players are. Of course, we had Conti, who just came back and was selected after multiple injuries to his knee. To me, those seem like more fluke injuries. Now, Caldara is going to be off for, Gattuso said, multiple months recovering from an injury. So there's been a lot of chatter on Milan Twitter, on Atalanta, you know, selling you a player that then gets broken, and maybe Juve knew something about Caldara. Well, look about Frank Kessie. Last season, I think he was the Milan player that appeared in the most minutes by far. Played with a lot of heart. Maybe he also played because the alternative is Bakayoko, who's been an absolute disaster. But shout out to Kessie and also for repping Atalanta a little bit better. Although they lost, Saponara has to be very happy scoring a goal against his former team at San Siro. Quagliarella, sensational in that match. What a joy it is to watch him. He's over 35. This is like the peak of his career now. Looks like a completely different player since he's been at Sampdoria. So good for him performing so well at San Siro. Now let's move to the Napoli-Roma match. And that was a pretty interesting one. So shout out to El Shaarawy, who scores the day after his birthday, giving Roma an early lead. Olsen was quite good in goal. I don't know how Napoli didn't score until the very end. Manolas also had a very strong performance defense-wise. So an encouraging result for Roma. I'm not sure if you can say that was an encouraging performance, but getting a point at Naples is a big, big deal for them. They needed that after the win in the Champions League, so some good momentum for them. Also, shout out to Dries Mertens, who scored off the bench for Napoli. He's been really good. You know, he's trying to adapt pretty well to Ancelotti. I have to say he's not a classic number nine for Ancelotti's system. He kind of likes the more big physical strikers to kind of open space for the rest. Now Mertens is just one goal behind Careca, who was the sensational Brazilian striker on Maradona's teams. Old Serie A fans like me, I remember him fondly. Mertens just one goal behind him in Serie A while wearing a Napoli jersey. Quite the achievement for him. So those are our winners. And again, we're recording this before Inter Lazio. The losers, once again, Ventura makes the list. I watched some of that Chievo match. Chievo definitely looked more organized than his 3-5-2. But benching Birsa to me is absolutely inexcusable. I feel like the only real advantage Chievo has is Giaccherini and Birsa, two players who I think are really, really good for a team, you know, in the race to avoid relegation. I have no idea why he didn't start. And actually, when he came on, Chievo looked a lot better. Sampdoria's defense loser this week, they went into that match against Milan, having conceded only 4 goals. They conceded 3 to Milan. Milan has struggled to score more than one goal in most matches. So that wasn't the best performance by Anderson, their Danish center back, who's gotten a lot of praise. I'm sure they can get back on track. We mentioned Mertens. The flip side is Milik, who hasn't been able to narrow down, to bang down the starting striker position at Napoli, despite being more typical for Ancelotti. I'm still very high on Milik. He was my pick for the breakout player of the season in Serie A. But if Mertens keeps scoring off the bench, we've seen that Ancelotti isn't afraid to vary his tactics. So let's see what happens there. And the last loser is Spal, who we had mentioned as a winner a lot early into the season. They've struggled considerably recently. They lost at home 3-0 against Frosinone, who was basically a non-factor this season. So let's see if Spal can get back on track or if they were just a great story to start the season. So those are our winners and losers. Now let's transition to our Twitter questions. As always, you can send a question for the podcast, and we are recording on Thursday using the CalcioLand hashtag. You can send us questions on Serie A. The January transfer window is not too far away. So transfers, Champions League, TV, music, films, journalism, podcasting, you name it. So what questions are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, this is a very interesting question. So some pundits still aren't convinced by Inter because they lack a style of play, despite their 7 wins in a row before the Barca game. For any team to impress you, what factors do you consider?
Very, very good question. So, you know, teams not having a very distinct style of play, I can see that. I mean, obviously, you watch Sarri, you know what he's going to do. Some managers are really known for the formation that they use and that they can, you know, stay stubborn in that. But I feel like there are some managers that are a little bit more chameleons. I mean, I mentioned Ancelotti likes to vary. Like, even going into the season at Napoli, I don't know anyone who could, like, really accurately describe what Ancelotti's style is. As far as tactics go, when you hear about Ancelotti, it's more about his ability to manage superstars and how he's always even keeled and he creates a family atmosphere. So I think there are some managers who maybe it's not that easy to define their style. And in some cases, I think they're penalized by the way they are perceived. Even Allegri, and you talk a lot about it, Alex, how he's a chameleon, how he adapts a lot to the other team. And maybe when he has such a strong Juve, maybe he shouldn't do that much. But also Allegri is a manager that, you know, it's kind of hard to pinpoint his style. So I really wouldn't hold that against Spalletti per se. But I will tell you, there are some things that I always look for a team to decide if they impress me or not. And I think the resilience is really important. The thing about Inter that you have to say under the Spalletti era, going back to last season, and just think of how they qualified for the Champions League, is how they score in the last minute. They don't, you know, fall apart. Even Inter this season, they've had a lot of matches where they rallied at the end. Their winning streak against Spurs started exactly that way. So resilience is really important. Consistency. We talked about Milan, one step forward, one step back. Inter used to be like that for a long time. They've been a lot more consistent. They've been able to win ugly. Another thing that I look is, you know, how do these teams perform when they play against top teams? I think, you know, a negative quality is if you play down to your opposition when you play against a weak team, you don't put out your best. But I think it's even more encouraging. The flip side is if you really rise to the occasion against a top team, that impresses you more. If a team does that, I might forgive a little bit more if they lower their standards against a top team. And the last thing, and this is what I mentioned earlier about Milan, this is kind of like my way of thinking now. When I look at a team, is I ask myself, how many of these players could start on Juve or whatever the team right above their level is? That's really how I ask myself and I measure team. Do you have anything else, Alex, that you look in these things? Because it really is a very good question.
Yeah, you know, you hit a lot of the bases there. Consistency, of course, is one. I would say for me to really be impressed by a team, are they picking up 3 points on the road? Are they getting road victories? Now, obviously, it's important to protect home, win the games you're supposed to win. But are you stealing some points that people, even if you're a good team, didn't see you stealing? I think because that really builds character. I feel like when teams get on the team plane when they're away and they get that extra 2 points, it really builds a lot of camaraderie and chemistry. So I think road victories really are almost more symbolic when a team is doing well. That's my opinion. So, David, this is a very interesting Twitter question as well. Can Napoli keep Lorenzo Insigne and Koulibaly even if they're not winning any trophies?
Well, they have so far, and that's a really encouraging sign. And look, you know, anyone who follows the transfer market, and you're a Chelsea fan, so you know this firsthand. Like buying a player off Napoli isn't exactly easy. Juve made it maybe a little bit too easy with the will of the player. Napoli, not so much. It's interesting because they came pretty close to selling Koulibaly once. And the only reason they didn't is Juve exercised the exit clause in Higuain's contract. And so then they gave Koulibaly a huge contract and they convinced him to stay because they weren't going to lose both. You got to wonder, man, that's a great what if. I actually think Napoli would probably be weaker had they kept Higuain and sold Koulibaly, as great as Higuain was. Since then, Koulibaly absolutely loves the city of Naples. Last summer, there really was never any substantial buzz on him leaving. He really adores the city. They're paying him really well. So we'll see. Obviously, though, a center back like that, there's just not that many on the market. And, you know, teams do throw crazy money at center backs more than in years past. For Insigne, you know, he's the hometown boy. He's a Scugnizzo from Napoli. They gave him a nice raise. But you never know. I mean, of the two, it's kind of hard to say who is more likely to leave. But it would shock me if both stay long term. Just don't underestimate Napoli, because I think now with Ancelotti and they're doing better in Europe. You know, it's an interesting situation. I didn't mention it in the loser segment, though. So since we're on the topic, I think Napoli not beating Roma, they are losers in that sense, because they gave back the 2 points that Juve lost to Genoa. But as far as keeping players, they know what they're doing. And I think the project with Ancelotti, I think, is just going to give them more buzz and make it harder for them to lose players.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny. Chelsea fans are just saying, oh, we need goals. Let's get Lorenzo Insigne in January. And I'm sitting there thinking, why do you think that that could even be an option? Have you seen the tattoo on his leg, by the way? He kind of likes it at Napoli. Kind of likes it. All right, David.
And I doubt and I doubt Napoli's going to want to help Sarri anymore. I'd say of all the teams, I think that might hurt Chelsea. But let's not get too sidetracked.
Absolutely. All right, David. Next Twitter question. If you could pick one player from each top Serie A team who makes them click, who would it be?
Great question. So I didn't put him in any particular order. I knew the easiest one was Brozovic. On this podcast, we've been on the bandwagon for a long time. As Brozovic goes, so does Inter. I think it's very fitting for Inter that a player, you know, as exuberant and all over the place as he is, would be who makes Pazza Inter click. For Juve, this is a tough one because they're such a good collective. There's so many good players. I mean, they did just fine before Ronaldo arrived. For this particular team, I'm going to pick Bonucci because his passing game is really, really important. Other than Pjanic, they kind of miss a classic great passer in the midfield. And by the same token, Bonucci's been responsible on most of the goals that Juve gives up and maybe even the Empoli one a little bit. He's responsible. So to me, Bonucci brings a lot to the table with his passing, but also takes stuff off the table with his defending. So I'm going to pick Bonucci for Juve. For Milan, cop out, I pick two. I think Suso, when he's brilliant, Milan's much better. I think as Biglia goes, though, the midfield, he makes a huge difference for Milan. For Napoli, it's a good question because last year the easy answer was Jorginho. This year with Ancelotti, they've been much more of a chameleon team. I'm going to say this Fabian Ruiz kid is really, really impressive. He looks like they invested a lot in him, and even Ancelotti said that in a recent interview. So let's see if he can turn into the player kind of Jorginho was. But they're really more collective. I still think Callejon's a really, really important player. We thought he'd be phased out with Sarri leaving, but continues to be an important player for them. On Lazio, I'm going to pick Acerbi because I think it was so important for Lazio to replace De Vrij adequately because their defense, Caceres is still pretty good, but there's really no blue chip defender on Lazio or even maybe a red chip defender other than Caceres. So I think he's the most important. Lazio has surprisingly done quite well with Milinkovic-Savic and Luis struggling. So I'm going to go with Acerbi. And for Roma, I think it's Dzeko right now. You know, if he scores and he does well, Roma does great. If Dzeko doesn't score, they are in big trouble.
All right, David, last Twitter question. And boy, I'm starting to love the fact that this man is becoming a popular topic again. Would Antonio Conte be a better fit at Bayern Munich or Real Madrid?
This is a great opportunity to give an update on this. We've been pretty quiet on Di Marzio's site on the Conte situation with Real Madrid. So today there was an update and Gianluca tweeted that right now looks like Real Madrid's going to try to pull another Zidane. So they're going to promote, looks like Santiago Solari is going to be promoted to managing the team. Very similar trajectory as Zidane. It looks like Conte isn't particularly welcome at Real Madrid. We had heard in the summer how some players were, you know, pretty concerned about his style. And I heard this came up again after the El Clasico yesterday. The other thing is, you know, Conte still in dispute with Chelsea. He's going to see that one through. So I was very curious. I didn't think Conte would, you know, take Milan over midseason. I think he'd rather wait till the following year. And to me, I still think that's the best situation for Conte where he can do the best work. Maybe he would have done an exception of his fight for Chelsea with Real Madrid, but it doesn't look like he will. Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, you know, because they have a lot of veterans that have a lot of say in the locker room, and that really at Bayern, that really hurt Ancelotti. I'm not sure if he's in an ideal fit there. I think Conte needs to be at a team that isn't meeting expectations, but maybe a top club with those personalities like that isn't the best fit. So I'm on the bandwagon that the best spot for Conte is Milan. Whenever that should be, I think that's where he should go next. So those are our Twitter questions for the week. For Monday, we'll do some more on Thursday. As always, thank you for your support. Keep sending questions. Please leave us reviews. They really help the podcast grow. And please let your friends know about the podcast if you enjoy listening to us. And now let's take a deep dive around the mid-table with our great friend Paolo Mangone. So, his Twitter bio says it specifically. Mid-table calcio expert, Di Marzio staff writer, views are my own. So, as you guys know, we like to check in with the top teams in Serie A pretty regularly. We have some go-to guests for some teams. We try to spice it up with other teams and constantly bringing in new people. But when it comes to getting deep into the mid-table, there's no one better than our good friend Paolo Mangone. You guys know him on Twitter as Pablito. You can follow him at IlCano22. So, Paolo, it's great to have you back on CalcioLand. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Thanks, David. It's always a pleasure to be back.
Okay, so let's keep it really simple at the top. I'm going to mention some teams that we haven't discussed on the podcast in sometime, and I want you to rank them. So I did this in no particular order, and you can decide. We have Sampdoria, Fiorentina, Torino, and Atalanta. To me, this is the more noble mid-table teams. So how are you ranking them right now? If you had to guess where they end the season, how do you think it's going to shake out?
Well, I think Atalanta would finish in the European position. They're the team that would has the best chance of finishing in Europe, since they have the experience of being in Europe, and they got knocked out of the Europa League very early this season. I think Fiorentina is the second team to have a better chance of finishing in Europe. I really like their attack is one of the best in Italy. I rank Chiesa and Simeone very highly, and then Samp, they had a bit of a defensive breakdown yesterday against Milan, but Quagliarella and Saponara showed some great talent, and I think their defense will hold up for the rest of the season. Ranked Torino last out of the four teams because Mazzarri is not known as an attacking coach, very defensive minded, and the other three teams are very offensive, have great strike forces, and I think Torino will suffer because of their decision to go with Mazzarri.
Yeah, I have to say Torino was in the summer. They spent a lot. They did a lot of moves that on paper look good, but every time they play a match, I always feel like it's going to end in a draw as a best-case scenario for them, although I didn't pick them in the picks, and I regretted it the minute I started watching that match. So now let's talk about the next tier of teams in the mid-table. We have Sassuolo, Genoa, who I was very high going into the season, Cagliari, and Parma. How do you rank these teams?
Well, I think Sassuolo has the best chance to stay out of the relegation zone. They are exceeding all its expectations with their attacking prowess this season. I think Cagliari will also stave off relegation. Former Kiev coach Rolando Moran has been teaching them the tricks and the trades of playing a little bit dirty in Serie A, as proven these past couple of weekends. And then I think it will be a slugfest between Parma and Genoa. Parma has some good players in Rovigno, as we have seen flashes of brilliance. But at the end of the season, it may not be enough. And with Genoa, I was struggling to understand why they sacked Ballardini. He wasn't doing that badly. And they bring in a more defensive coach in Ivan Juric, who also got sacked last season, to bring in Ballardini. So it's a case of revolving doors. And I think this mistake will cost them at the end of the season.
So now let's talk about two teams that have overachieved in a specific part of their team, I would say. We had Sampdoria, who going into the match against Milan had the best defense in Serie A. We had Sassuolo, who for a while had the most goals scored in the Serie A. So I got to ask you, of those two things, which one do you think has a better chance of sustaining?
I think Sassuolo, you know, with their coach Roberto De Zerbi, is more of an attacking-minded coach and probably trains on their attacking set pieces and their attacking movements every single day in training. It's a lot harder to defend, and that's why, and I've seen yesterday against the game against Milan, when Samp has to go up against teams, desperate big teams that have to win, I think it's a lot harder to defend than to attack.
Okay, excellent answer. You know, we ride for De Zerbi on this podcast. So speaking of attack, the mid-table teams do have some pretty intriguing strikers, and I picked four. I picked Simeone, Belotti, Pavoletti, and Berardi. If you had to guess of these four, who's going to have more goals at the end of the season?
Personally, I would pick Giovanni Simeone. He's playing with Federico Chiesa, and he's been the assist man for him. Out of the rest, I think Berardi would have more goals just because he plays with more talented players, a lot of depth behind him. But then the reason why I didn't choose Pavoletti or Belotti is because they're alone, they're isolated in their attack. They're the main focal point with no one really providing them with any assists other than Yao Pedro and Cagliari. For Pavoletti, and then Iago Falque for Belotti. There's no really other players that could help those two strikers.
Okay, so now we're going to go even deeper into the table and start talking a little bit about the race to avoid relegation. So there are three teams that are right above, going down to Serie B. We have Spal, Bologna, and Udinese. Of these three, which one do you think has a bigger chance of getting sucked into the bottom three and really, really having a tight end of the season?
I think it's going to be Spal because they lost 3-0 at home against another relegation contender in Frosinone. And that's rare for Spal. Usually their home stadium is like a fortress. So that's a worrying sign for their coach, Simplici. And they might have to fix some things coming up in the international break.
Okay, so now let's talk about the three teams that are at the bottom. You and I kind of had a rivalry. I had Chievo, you have Bologna. Right now you look a lot better than me. Chievo has Ventura, so far 2 losses in his return. Frosinone, who finally did beat Spal, but they've struggled. And then we have Empoli, who everyone praised for the way they played against Juve, but points haven't been that great. If you had to pick one of these that has the best chance to avoid relegation, who would it be and why?
The best chance as of today, I would pick Empoli just because of their performance against Juventus. They literally pushed Juventus to the limits and forced the magic from Cristiano Ronaldo to beat them. Frosinone has also turned around in form, so I would not discount him as well. But Chievo seems to be the pick to go down, and the appointment of Ventura didn't help.
Okay, so you gave us a great overview on these teams. I feel much more caught up. I hope our listeners do as well. We like to cover all of Calcio as much as possible on the podcast. And you mentioned some of the players, but let's zero in a little bit more. Of all the teams that we've talked about so far today, are there some players that you think deserve to be highlighted more? Maybe some players that our listeners might not be that familiar with that they should check out, maybe something they can use in their fantasy league with Euro Fantasy Game. or just a player that they can maybe buy on FIFA or brag about to their friends because they were on to them earlier? Which players would that be?
Well, especially for the fantasy league, Daniel Chiofani, the main striker for Frosinone and their captain, he's just came back into the squad from a long injury. And he scored two goals in Frosinone's 3-3 draw 2 weeks ago. And it doesn't surprise me that Frosinone's return to form coincides with his return. So I expect big things from him. Another striker is Caputo. He seems to be Empoli's main man. And when Empoli is doing well, he seems to be scoring. Also, sticking with Empoli, Afriacqua, he's their engine in midfield.
Okay, so Paolo, you've as always did a fantastic job. You've lived up to your reputation as a mid-table calcio expert. You guys can follow Paolo at IlCano22, a lot of great tweets. You can read, he helps us out on the Marzio site. I'm looking forward. I know you're really busy with some more articles. You wrote a great article on your experience at San Siro watching Milan not long ago. So thanks so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on Calcioland.
Thank you, David. It's always a pleasure.